Welcome everybody to the War and Peace Baseball Podcast. It is episode 94, Friday, October 6th. I'm Alex Uy, and I'm here today with Ray Estrada. What's up?
Nothing much, man.
Yep, just drinking in some postseason baseball. I wish it were better. You know, I can't really complain too much right now because it's just Yankees made it, but they're still struggling, so I don't know.
Yeah, if Uy sounds sad, that's because we're watching the Yankees game one where they're losing.
I'm not supposed to be like this, but this is hard. I have the stream on. Maybe that's a bad thing for me. But we're just gonna talk for a little bit about the division series. We'll talk about all the series, not just not just obsess over the Yankees one. So if you hear us react to the Yankees Indians game in progress right now, then pay no attention to it. It'll be old news by the time anybody hears this. But we'll do our best to talk about, you know, some of these new matchups that we'll be seeing. And I guess I should say that we're not just going to completely summarize like everything that's happened play by play. You don't need that. You can go open your MLB app or whatever and see everything you need to know about what's happened. So, you know, we'll briefly touch on the wildcard games, but nothing too major there. So, yeah, anything else to add before we jump right into it here?
No, a lot of people love October for Halloween. I love it for postseason baseball.
Yeah, I know. Halloween's all the way at the end of the month. People know. Start worrying about that way too much. But, so let's go ahead and start with the series that obviously I'm the most invested in. Yankees and Indians. You know, get it off my chest right now, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. Currently, Sonny Gray and Trevor Bauer facing off, and Bauer seems to be having the edge in this game right now. They're up 3-0. So let's go ahead and assume, you know, as hard as this is for me to say, let's assume that the Indians jump out to a one-game advantage here in this series. Tomorrow, the matchup would be CC Sabathia and Corey Kluber, who... how many times do you think that the Cy Young Award winner has pitched Game 2 of a postseason series where they weren't not, in a wild card game either? Like
not very often. If I had to guess,
actually, I'm curious what game did Rick Porcello pitch last year?
Price got lit up in Game 1, didn't
technically,
he?
Technically, Cy Young Rick Porcello, who is now taking a bullpen role, was definitely starting last year, so I don't know. I have no idea how I'd look it up right now. If you want to try that, you can.
I can try and get that. Yeah,
it's not super important, but I think the point is that this matchup
but
is
going to eat at us for the rest of the.
I think it's fair to say that all the Indians Yankees pitching matchups are pretty lopsided, so it's just going to take a little bit of grit, a little bit of, you know. Nose the ground baseball to try to get a couple runs off of the Indian starters and then try to just send the bullpen out to lock it down. That's going to be the formula. I think it gets really annoying hearing announcers and other
Porcello
people
was game one, just to clarify.
Okay, so
Kluber was also game two last year.
Really?
That means anything. Yeah.
Who did they start game one?
Let me see, because Andrew Miller was credited with the win in game one. But
interesting.
Maybe Bauer? I'm not entirely sure.
Could it have been Bauer last year? That doesn't seem
in
right.
In game one?
Or was it Carrasco?
Maybe, actually.
I don't know.
Wasn't Carrasco hurt?
We're just speculating about last year at this point. I don't know how productive
just
that
for
is.
For curiosity's sake,
Carrasco was out.
Let's get to this.
Carrasco
year.
Was out of there last year.
Yeah, right? The only other like starting pitcher I see is Bauer. And Tomlin, but Tomlin went game three.
Yeah, well, I guess Trevor Bauer has specifically game one starting experience, which is why he's pitching right now. So, yeah, like I mentioned, the Yankees in their bullpen, it gets really annoying when people say that the Yankees can't lean on their bullpen the entire postseason, and I'm just here like, why not? Why not just turn every game into a bullpen game? It's just such a good bullpen. I have no problem with overusing relief pitchers because it's really not overusing them if you're using them like 1 to 2 innings at a time. I mean, they're professionals. They do this throughout the course of the regular season. They pitch 2 or 3 days in a row with no issues. Like, there's a lot of concern for what the Yankees are going to do when their bullpen runs dry. It's not going to run dry unless there's, you know, significant injuries or, you know, other problems. Like, I don't think fatigue at this point in the season is going to hit too hard with pitchers that are throwing, you know, 30 pitches per outing at most. So, I don't know. What do you think about the Yankees bullpen versus the Indian starters, basically? It's a weird situation.
I mean, you mentioned that these guys are trained to go 2-3 innings. And I think if you're the Yankees, you kind of have to lean on your bullpen. You can't say we want to save our bullpen, so we're going to stretch our starters out more than we have to. But the thing is that, I mean, I saw it with the Dodgers last year. The bullpen does get tired. I know these guys are supposed to do it 2-3 days in a row, but I mean, these are stressful innings in the playoffs, and that does make a big enough difference. Like, Joe Blanton ran out of gas, and he was poor in the playoffs last year. But it's like I said, at the same time, they're going to have to do it, and if it works out for them, it works out for them, because we saw in 2015, the Royals leaned on their bullpen guys a lot. They're was it a three-headed monster? Well, Holland was hurt, but either way, they leaned on their bullpen a lot because James Shields didn't go that deep into games. But
you can look at that situation, though, and even see very obviously the Yankees' bullpen is much deeper than, you know,
that's the thing. The Yankees have, like, 4, 5, 6 arms that are quality arms that they can interchange every once in a while.
I would say they have, at this point, they have 5 elite arms in that bullpen. You have Chapman, you have Betances, you have Robertson, you have Canely, and you have Chad Green, who is, you know, every Yankees fan's savior at this point for getting us out of that dreaded wild card first inning. But that's a five-headed monster. Like, that's something
that's
we haven't,
about
that's
it.
Unprecedented. All of them, you know, are bringing, you know, 97 plus stuff on a regular basis. Like, Robertson maybe is the only one who's not, but has a wicked curveball. So, I mean, I don't know what people are really concerned about with the Yankees. Like, you can't rely on a bullpen for an entire series. It's just not going to work. I think it'll work. I don't know. I'd much rather see them try to make it work than try to, you know, to have them run out their starting pitchers just to eat innings, so to speak. I mean, right now, they're not using their elite guys. They're down 3 runs after Sonny Gray was pulled. He was pulled early. He was pulled in the 4th inning. And, you know, they're throwing guys like Adam Warren, Jaime Garcia. They do have guys to eat up some innings as well that are, you know, pretty solid guys. But it's all about just finding a way to get to some sort of lead off of them. Oh, Jesus Christ. Jay Bruce, okay. Jay Bruce just drove in his 4th run of the night, so there you go. 4-0 Indians. God damn it. I told you I was going to be reacting to this.
Yeah,
as it happened.
To pick it up from there, I think if there's any team that can ride their bullpen as much as the Yankees need to, it is the Yankees, because like you mentioned, it's five guys, 3 of them who have been closers. And I mean, was Canely a closer before he
got?
Doesn't
even matter. Like, that's just a title. The dude throws like 99 miles an hour with a wicked slider and a changeup, and he throws strikes. Like, there's nothing, there's no track record needed. Like, his arm is clearly fresh from what you saw in the wild card game. I don't know about fresh, but he's got enough in the tank. Like, you're not going to burn out 5 pitchers, you know, doing something like that. It's one thing to talk about, you know, overusing Kenley Jansen, or last year the Cubs had to lean a lot on Aroldis Chapman. It's completely different this year with the Yankees, so I don't want to hear the comparisons anymore. Unless you want to refute that with any kind of, you know, evidence that they will likely wear down, but I have no idea how people are so convinced that will happen. Maybe it's just because they hate the Yankees. I can respect that at least. yeah, so this series does seem very lopsided in general. Like, except for the bullpen, everything leans the Indians' way, especially the lineup. You know, if it's as simple as this. If the Indians can get around Judge and Sanchez, then they're set. There's nothing else in the Yankees lineup that's really terrifying. Like, the Indians lineup is pretty scary deep. You know, obviously, when you have, you know, core guys like Lindor and Ramirez in there, that kind of, you know, starts everything too. But then you get even deeper. You have Encarnacion and Bruce and Carlos Santana, who is, you know, an extremely professional hitter at that point. Can you give me any more on the Indians lineup? Anything else in particular that you like, or are you gonna agree with me that the lineups are very, very skewed at this point?
I mean, I would say that in terms of comparing lineups, the Indians are they have more guys who are night in, night out threats. When you, like you mentioned, Judge and Sanchez, those are the only two guys who day to day you really have to worry about. Like, Gardner hit that home run. We saw Didi can get hot, but
right. And I'm not trying to to take anything out. I love a lot of these Yankees hitters, and I freaking love Brett Gardner. He gives you a professional at bat every time. He's just not, you know, a super dangerous hitter. He's a grindy type of hitter, which, you know, is good, but he's like one of the few in that entire lineup that's like that, and that's just not going to cut it. So, you know, okay, that's a very deep fly ball. okay, it's fine. I caught it the warning track. Sorry. This is just how we got to be. We got to pause in the middle and just kind of, we're going to react. We're not going to try to even attempt to be professional about it in any way. We're just talking. It's very casual, you know.
Yeah.
If you're listening, hi. You know, say hi to us. We're having a conversation, right? That's the kind of podcast this is. So, I think we've said enough about the Yankees and Indians. I think that I can drone on much longer if I wanted to, but who really needs more of that, right? That's all there is, right? Everybody's talking about the Indians. Everybody's talking about the Yankees. These are the big primetime teams. Let's talk about some other series. Let's talk about the other AL one. How about that? Yep. And then we'll get to, you know, the NL ones that haven't happened yet. So, Red Sox and Astros. The Sale Verlander matchup in game one was a little bit disappointing, I think is fair to say. Or Chris Sale's playoff postseason debut, right? I think.
I mean, that's been my concern all year, though. When I thought it was a good trade to go get Sale. They needed an ace pitcher, but I was like, Sale is normally he's traditionally a first half heavy guy, and he hasn't pitched in the postseason. So I mean, it's not wholly unexpected that he struggled against a really potent Astros lineup. And George Springer didn't contribute anything to it either. It's just Altuve went nuts today.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not just gonna say it was only Altuve. I freaking love Jose Altuve. Oh man, that was I watched that entire game also, and you know, the two first home runs he hit were basically to the exact same spot, and the third one was just a freaking towering bomb he hit off of a hanging changeup. Like, this guy is the real deal, and now that it's playoff time, he can just hit home runs like it's nobody's business. You know, I don't expect him to falter in any way. And you did mention, you know, guys like Springer and Correa didn't do much. Bregman did tag Sale also, but the depth of that lineup is what is most impressive. You know, throughout the game, Evan Gattis had a very big game. You know, he hits in the middle of the lineup. Marwin Gonzalez is really tough at bat. He had a really big two-run double in there as well. And he hit eighth, so I think the Astros lineup in terms of depth is probably their best asset, you know, especially for a postseason situation. They didn't have any players with over 100 RBI, I believe, but they were still up there in that category, because they got the merry-go-round going better than anybody at this point.
Yeah, that was a great stat. I think Jim Cott pulled it out that Marwin Gonzalez led them in RBIs, and I don't know know the exact number, but the team that's last time the team scored the most runs in the major leagues and didn't have a guy with over 100 RBIs was the 1984 Detroit Tigers, who won the World Series that year. So
yeah, maybe that's a good omen. You never hear about, because it's the only reason that's the case also is just because they had injuries from, you know, yeah, Springer and Correa in the middle there that really didn't allow them to. They were probably on pace to, if I were to guess. But, you know, everybody just stepped into their roles and played really well. And it's good to see that in the postseason from an Astros team who has had that heartbreaking series loss. Like, same is going to go for most of these teams. Their history in the postseason is going to create a really interesting narrative. The Red Sox are a little different, though, because they're a team that's won it multiple times recently. I mean, in the last, you know, decade.
They won three times a century.
Yeah. So I think it's a little different, the narrative for the Red Sox. It's not so much of first time testing new waters situation for them. They know how to operate this territory, but now they're doing it without David Ortiz. They're doing it when, you know, Dustin Pedroia is not the same player he used to be. That's just how it is. It's unfortunate, but they got to see what they have in these other, you know, young players. Last year they got swept by the Indians, right? So they didn't have a chance.
And that was with Ortiz and,
right, like, and that's more of a testament to how the Indians did last year. But
oh yeah, but
it's a little concerning to see some of the Red Sox core players not really producing on the big stage as much as you'd like. It was one game. I'm not gonna overreact here, but Xander Bogaerts just doesn't look very sharp right now. Mookie Betts is, you know, always good, but, and same with Benintendi, they're tough at bats, but who's gonna step up and be the guy? They don't have that person right now that's gonna take charge and, you know, come up with the big hit when it's needed the most. So real quick, let's switch gears and talk about the pitching in this game again. Chris Sale did not fare well, as we mentioned. Was there anything about Sale's performance that really stood out to you that seems like something he can correct in the near future, or is there other concern regarding Sale and what he's doing?
I know Jim Cott on MLB Network was saying something about too flat of an arm angle, kind of not hitting his spots well, and that's what it really was. He was missing spots a lot, and I don't really know what else he can do. I mean, because he's such a great pitcher, and sometimes, especially in the second half, he gets kind of hit, and he's victimized by first pitch home runs. So I don't really know what. I didn't see anything that was like, okay, oh, this is exactly what he's doing wrong. He tweaks this one thing, it's going to be fine. So it's going to be interesting to see how he progresses from here.
Yeah, I want him to bounce back. I mean, he needs to bounce back. He needs this. It's not that the velocity's gone, the arm's just sapped. It's just the biggest thing looked like the slider. He wasn't able to get that depth, that downward movement. You know, he can sling it across the strike zone all he wants, but if you don't make it look enticing enough, making it look enough like a strike, nobody's going to swing at it. And that's normally the problem when he, you know, starts giving up a lot of homers. He doesn't walk batters, which is why he's able to, you know, limit the damage. He gave up, you know, three solo homers in this game, I think. Or two solo homers, three solo homers.
Three.
Yeah, three.
Bregman, Altuve, Altuve.
Right. And, you know, whatever else happens, happens. He's always going to challenge hitters. I think if you're looking for something different that you're going to see in the next start, I think you're going to see a lot more changeups, because the Astros definitely seem to be sitting fastball a lot, or earlier in today's game they did. So I'm going to be interested in seeing Sale's next start more than anything. If he does get another start, you know, it's still an if.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the rest of the series too, and the interesting starter choices that they have to run out there. Pomeranz is going tomorrow, or I guess today, Friday, against Dallas Keuchel. That seems pretty straightforward. But then after that, it gets really fuzzy. We don't have to talk much about Pomeranz, Keuchel. You know, two lefties that, you know, don't throw super hard, but they work really effectively. So
average velocity will be down tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess.
Or today.
But they have, I think Pomeranz is really underrated even to this point. His curveball is really, really good. It's a really tough pitch to hit. It's, you know, we talk about Trevor Bauer and his curveball and how that's been the key to his success. Pomeranz's been doing that for a while now. So I don't have worry about him. I'm not worried about Keuchel either, really, because he's been on this stage before. You know, he knows how to, you know, pitch under pressure. It's especially for a team like the Red Sox that are just really not that scary of a lineup power-wise. I think Keuchel will fare pretty well. We'll see how that prediction ends up, though. Game 3 is where it gets interesting. You know, beyond there, most of it's uncertain. Doug Fister, though, is the Red Sox starter, and the Astros have a number of players that who I would say are all definitively better than Doug Fister. They can go with McCullers, they can go with Charlie Morton, and they also have who's the other main starter that they use that they can throw out there? Peacock, Brad Peacock.
Yeah, Peacock.
So really good options all around. The Red Sox opted to use Porcello, though, in a bullpen capacity, as well as Eduardo Rodriguez. Both of them are going to be used in bullpen roles this series. So I don't know what that's going to mean. Is Sale going to pitch on short rest, go game 4? If they get there, it's probably what's going to end up happening. And, you know, who do the Astros go with game 3? Who do you like for game 3 for the Astros?
I mean, are you saying on the Astros team or for that game?
For game 3, who do you like for that game?
I think it favors the Astros because, like I said, I mean, Fister's been very inconsistent all year. He was the one who
I did mean pitcher. Like, okay. Which pitcher do you like for the Astros?
I think Charlie Morton is a very good option because he's not necessarily postseason experience, but just a veteran on the mound there. Peacock, I think you don't need to run out a youngster in game 3.
He's not just really a youngster. He's kind of in the prime of his career. He's like emerging.
I know.
I mean, he's emerging for the first time as a starter.
He's a new name, though.
Yeah, he doesn't have the experience in the postseason. That's for sure. But yeah, I say it a lot. Stuff plays in the postseason. Brad Peacock can easily go four innings and strike out like 8 batters if you know, that's
experience.
The kind of
experience
stuff
also experience also counts, though, because I mean, we thought Severino would dominate saying stuff plays, and you saw how that worked out.
I guess that's fair. You know, there are first game jitters out there, so it's all new. It's all new territory. Things that you can't really take into account with numbers. God, Aaron Judge struck out looking again. It's fine. I'm fine. All right. Let's talk about something else before, so I can take my mind off this. Are we good with the Red Sox and the Astros? I think.
It doesn't look good for the Red Sox. We agree on that.
Yeah, and I just realized that I've been saying I think a lot because I'm doing a lot of thinking apparently. So I hope that's not a nuisance. I just realized I was saying it, and it kind of bothers me. So, Yeah, also, we did post our postseason brackets, so if you're wondering...
On Twitter,
that's right. If you're wondering who we have in each of these series, we won't have to go out and explicitly state our cases for what we picked, but we did pick before the playoffs started altogether. So if you go on Twitter, you can see all of those tweets, although they're probably pretty far down at this point.
Yeah, because we are... more or less live tweeting the games.
I don't know if I'll be able to link those separately, but if I remember to, then you could find them in the description if you're really curious also. So yeah, let's go ahead and talk NL now. None of these games have happened yet. This is completely speculative conversation right here. Let's start with the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. Is probably what Dodgers fans we're most afraid of coming into this postseason is having to face the Diamondbacks, who have beaten the Dodgers in the season series, and, you know, just generally look really comfortable against a team like the Dodgers. D-backs, of course, won against the Rockies in a high-scoring affair. So, Ray, we got I'm lucky enough to have an insider Dodgers expert right here. I'm calling you an insider because it sounds better, by the way, so don't question it. What do you like about this series for the Dodgers? Or what are you scared about? Tell us either one.
I mean, you're always kind of wary of the potential of the Diamondbacks offense because of what we saw in the wildcard game. But at the same time, they gave up 8 runs. Their pitching didn't look as sharp when they were up 6-0. So I tweeted out from our account last night, and I kind of reiterated on my personal Twitter account that wildcard game kind of made me less nervous for facing the D-backs because they didn't go out and dominate the Rockies by any stretch. Offensively, maybe, but, I mean, it's Rockies pitching. Come on. The Diamondbacks showed they were vulnerable, and I mean, I feel like Kershaw's gonna step up to the challenge, and I don't know. I mean, the Dodgers bats just seem like they're hitting well right now. Because the thing is, when the Diamondbacks won those 6 straight against the Dodgers, in that September stretch that the Dodgers really struggled with, it was, I mean, the D-backs were really hot and the Dodgers were really cold, so. I mean, say what you will about that, but I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But I feel better after watching that wildcard game, oddly enough.
I think that I'm doing more thinking again. But the Diamondbacks wildcard performance would scare me if I were a Dodgers fan, especially considering a game where JD Martinez, the hottest hitter on the Diamondbacks, went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. The team still scored 11 runs, had 17 hits, and they left 10 runners on base in a game they scored 11 runs. That's, you know, the rest of this lineup is firing really well. I mean, the Rockies pitching is nothing special, granted, but that is a scary thing to know you have to face immediately following, you know, a really big momentum booster from, you know, your opponent. I think that JD Martinez is still probably going to be the biggest threat. Him and Goldschmidt, anyway, will definitely be the biggest threats to the Dodgers if JD Martinez gets a nice whiff of LA air again and remembers that beautiful 4-home-run night. Then that's going to mean trouble for the Dodgers, I'll tell you that much. I don't think the Dodgers are going to pull out a win in a game where JD Martinez decides to go off. So, lineup-wise, I think that the Diamondbacks might edge out the Dodgers because, you know, we look at the last month of the season with the Dodgers, obviously not exactly what you want on paper. I like the heart of their order, like most of these playoff teams, but the depth is just not impressing me right now. I don't know what to expect from, you know, Yasiel Puig and Chris Taylor, Curtis Granderson in the postseason at this point. It's so up in the air for me. At least I have a taste of what the Diamondbacks are able to do under about as much pressure as you could possibly face. Are you convinced that the Diamondbacks have a better lineup than the Dodgers, or are you still confident running the lineup you guys have out there?
I'm confident running the lineup we have because, I mean, It's still a good lineup. I agree with you that I think the Diamondbacks are a more powerful lineup. But I think the Dodgers pitching is going to step up. And I don't know, like I said, Arizona's pitching doesn't scare me right now. And Robbie Ray is kind of the one guy who's been really good against the Dodgers. And I don't know how he's going to be using the NLDS. I mean, he'll probably get a start and games 2 or 3, but how long is he going to go the way they used him in the wildcard game? How are they going to use him? Greinke hasn't looked impressive for a couple outings coming into the year, and then the wildcard game. So, I mean, the lineup is to be scared about, but I mean, the pitching isn't there.
Give me a percentage chance that Daniel Descalso takes Clayton Kershaw deep in game 1. definitely an on, you know, an on the spot question for you there.
15% because he
has
that
really high percentage in my opinion.
He has that Cardinals voodoo magic left in him, I think.
Is that what it is? All right. Well,
I don't know.
No Cardinals to be found this postseason.
Nope.
Thankfully. Or Giants, I guess. That's something to be happy
no.
about. Yeah, I mean, it's an odd year. What can you expect? Let's talk matchups really quick. Pitching-wise, Taiwan Walker's got game one for the Diamondbacks. They obviously used Greinke and Ray in that wild card game. So Walker is next in line there, I guess. And he's going up against Kershaw. No surprise there. They're not going bold like the Indians in throwing their ace in game two. So I mean, there's no reason to. Rich Hill is going game two for the Dodgers, though, at home. And then Darvish and Alex Wood apparently are going games three and four, which will be in Arizona. So, you know, Alex Wood, there's some, you know, speculation there whether or not he'd make the, you know, the rotation. I guess he is, definitively. Are there any other interesting roster decisions that you wanted to throw out there also, Ray?
Well, I haven't gotten to look at the whole roster, but Hyunjin Ryu was left off the roster. He was a guy that a lot of Dodgers people thought would be on there. He's kind of a long guy, and I know over at our friends Bleeding Blue Radio, JR and Trevor, talking about it, that the Dodgers could have played a bullpen game in game four, like if they wanted to use Wood, kind of like it seems like the D-backs are using Robbie Ray to kind of come in and be a stopgap in games one through three and get a couple innings to start game four and bring in Ryu and Maeda and such. But so the fact that he's going to be a straight starter is interesting, but it's not, I mean, it's not totally unexpected. I think Ryu was a bit of a surprise in terms of not having that kind of long guy in there. But other than that, that's kind of really the only big news I've heard out of the Dodgers roster.
I think everybody would agree that Dodgers rotation has the edge in every way over the Diamondbacks. Although the Diamondbacks is nothing to shrug off either. After Walker, they could either go with, you know, Ray or Greinke on somewhat shortish rest. They didn't throw that much in that wild card game anyway. Or they could go with Zach Godley and then turn to, you know, their two aces, so to speak, Greinke and Ray, back for the home portion of that series. So I can see that happening too. I'm really looking forward to this series, especially, you know, it's an interdivision rivalry. It's not Giants Dodgers. It's not the classic rivalry, but especially lately, Diamondbacks Dodger games have had a little bit more heat behind them. So this one in particular has some special context. I'm gonna be watching this one closely. I'm gonna be watching all these closely, to be honest. I'm just gonna be watching a ton of baseball, I guess, is my life for the next month.
It will be intense, and I will be in Uwe's shoes come tomorrow night.
Yeah, I've already, you know, survived probably the most nerve-wracking game of the postseason for me in that wild card game, so now everything else is kind of, you know, is child's play compared to that. All right, one more series we'll talk about, and it might be, you know, one of the more slept-on series of all these division series. Nobody wants to talk about the Cubs and the Nationals. The Cubs, coming off their championship last year, obviously have been slept on pretty much all season because they got off to a poor start. They did win the division. I don't know if you noticed that. I don't know if you noticed that Chris Bryant is among the league leaders in WAR yet again, and Anthony Rizzo turned out almost identical numbers to last year. Their defense is still, you know, pretty above average. They have a lot of the same pitchers. Their performance has been less than ideal for most of the season, but a lot of the same names, plus Jose Quintana. I don't know why so many people are sleeping on the Cubs. I personally have them getting out of this division against the Nationals, who are also, you know, one of the few powerhouse teams in all of baseball. What do you think it is about the Cubs that just has people very worried this year compared to last year?
I don't know. Their pitching is not as dominant. I mean, Quintana came in and, like, was a good stopgap, but he wasn't the ace type guy that I think some people thought he was going to be coming in. But, I mean, I think they had the best record in the second half in the National League.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know by how much.
It doesn't matter by how much. They had a really good second, really strong second
half.
No,
I mean, it was a strong second. I picked them to come out of this series too, mainly because I don't trust the Nationals to win anything until they do. But I mean, to kind of transition off that, going to the Nationals, the Cubs have all the same pieces, which I like. So I think they know how to get it done, and Joe Maddon just has something about him. But the Nationals, it seems like we talk about this every year, every other year. It's like, oh no, this Nationals team is different. This Nationals team is built to go deep in the postseason, and then they crap out in the division series. So I mean, it's not like they. It's tough to trust the Nationals who have very similar pieces like the Cubs do, but the Cubs have obviously won a championship, and the Nationals haven't won a postseason series.
Yeah, you know, the Nationals not winning a division series is kind of a joke at this point. But I think it's unfair to completely, you know, disregard a team that won over 100 games, right? Are they one of the teams or no?
I don't believe so. I think it was just Dodgers.
No, you're right. They're not.
Dodgers, Cleveland, and Astros.
A team that basically controlled their division the entire year with one of the more dominant rosters is being called into question pretty harshly. Also, because both of these teams are not getting enough appreciation. It's like nobody wants anybody to win there. Everybody is just all about the Dodgers and their historic season. Narratives, and more narratives. But the Cubs are basically, you know, they're running out a lot of the same guys they had around last year, plus some, you know, new faces that'll help out. You know, they've got a little bit more position depth. They have Ian Happ now. I do like John Jay. They don't have Fowler, but I think Jay is going to be a really underrated postseason asset. He was a huge asset for the Cardinals when they were making, you know, their big postseason runs earlier this decade. I really like Wade Davis at the back end too. Let's not forget that, you know, he is a very, very notoriously solid postseason performer. Probably, you know, almost an upgrade from Chapman. I guess it's hard to say that after, you know, what he was able to do last year. But, you know, Wade Davis is, you know, just about as good. And then a lot of the same bullpen arms still there. Hector Rondon, Pedro Strop. They have Koji Uehara now. Justin Wilson, they have arms that aren't as, you know, they aren't as sexy as the Yankees relievers and Betances and Chapman throwing 100 miles an hour, but it's a pretty strong bullpen, I will say as well. Carl Edwards Jr., another guy who was there last year in that bullpen. So, you know, I'm not going to say that the Cubs have this in the bag either. It is very different than last year. A lot of the same faces, very different circumstances. But, you know, I like the Cubs mojo still. I do think they're gonna remind people about how they felt last year. Do you feel similar? Do you feel like there's going to be a little bit of Cubs fever hitting people tomorrow when they see them back in the postseason?
I think that's definitely going to be the case. I mean, say it all you want, like, you can't really, like, past stuff doesn't matter. Like, it can lift you up, or it can hurt you, because the Cubs have those positive feelings. All right, we're back, we made it. Yeah, we had a rough first half, we closed well, and we know what we did last year, and just do it again this year. And then the Nationals, I mean, I know they tried to put it behind them, but like I said, they haven't won a postseason series. It's hard to say, like, especially when you get close to, like, hey, this is going to be our first one ever, essentially, back in Washington. But it's like, it's the mental side, I think, favors the Cubs in terms of just how the teams will feel going in. But I mean, this is another intriguing series, because two teams that are very quality rosters, and I think it could go either way.
Yeah, I mean, 3 years in a row for the Cubs making the postseason after, you know, one of the most impressive droughts in history. So I'm very excited about that. Let's talk matchups with this series as well. Hendricks and Strasburg are going to square up for game one. And game two for the Nationals is where it gets interesting. Max Scherzer is still not confirmed to pitch game two or game three or at all. They're going to evaluate him based on his next, you know, side bullpen session. But I knew as soon as it happened, it was the Sunday, right? The last game of the season.
Yeah, left to start with a hamstring. It was like, oh, that's not a good thing to go out with.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, he's got about as much competitive fire in him as anybody on this planet. But that's not going to, you know, make him healthier coming into the playoff start where they, you know, they're going into a division series that they've never won before. So they need a healthy Scherzer, and that's going to be key for them. If not, it's going to be Gio Gonzalez, who's also been really good. And the Cubs are going to run out Lester, and then Quintana and Arrieta going fourth at home for them. So a little bit strange ordering for the Cubs, but, you know, if you think about it, it makes sense. You've got the right guys going free at home. So, yeah, do you have anything else to say about the starting rotations for these teams?
No, not really. I think if you're a Nationals fan concerned, it sounds like Scherzer's going to pitch either game two or three. It just depends on if he needs that extra day. Because between games two and three, he'll have the extra day of rest regardless. Mm-hmm. So he'll get an extra 2 days compared to game two if he goes three. But I just thought Hendricks was a little bit curious game one. Not saying it's a bad choice. I mean, see what Trevor Bauer's done so far. But I mean, Hendricks last year was an easy game one pick, but I would think Lester is tough as it has been at times this year for him. I think he's your playoff guy. Although Hendricks was very good in the playoffs last year, so
yeah, he's got game one experience.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't the pick I was expecting to see when it said Hendricks tapped for game one for the Cubs.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, it gets very tricky strategy-wise with wild card games for the most part, but neither of these teams had to deal with anything wild card related. But I wonder if there is something to, you know, I'm not saying Hendricks is their weakest pitcher. He's probably been their hottest pitcher lately, but why not throw your better pitchers against the other team's three or fours? If you know you don't have anybody that can match up against Steven Strasburg, you know, throw out a soft thrower like Kyle Hendricks, see what happens, and then use your best guys against, you know, the other team's not so good guys. So I don't know if there's any strategy planning that was involved in that decision. It's hard to say. I'm sure every possible scenario has been thought out by.
Yeah, I think clubs. It is. I think it sure is, and I think it's good to get Quintana started home, because I mean, that's where he's most familiar at this point. I mean, he's certainly not too familiar with Washington, playing in the National League, in the American League, his whole career. But that's why you saw in the Dodgers series, Hill's going second because he is a much better pitcher at home compared to on the road. So it's kind of things like that that probably went into that decision.
Yeah. So I think that's all the series. We did four series in our podcast.
Four series.
We
did. Yeah.
Was there anything else that we glossed over that you wanted to mention about any of these series before we wrapped up our podcast that popped into your head at any point? Or you?
No, I think we hit kind of all the major points.
Oh, I do want to mention, though, with the Red Sox, Eduardo Nunez left the game in the very first at-bat for him. He was hitting second against, Verlander and the Astros. He had good career numbers against Verlander, so he was DHing. The very first pitch he saw chopped it to third base and running out of the box. His knee just completely gave out, did not look good at all, could not put any pressure on it. I really feel for that guy. He was definitely trying to give it his all. You could see it in his face. He wanted to do everything in his power to walk off that field, and he just couldn't. It was too much pain. That's really not a good sign. Hopefully it doesn't, you know, have too many implications for next season. Now, hopefully he heals up. But he's definitely not playing again this postseason. That's an important player that they don't have.
Chris Young has already replaced him on the Red Sox roster.
Yeah, that's good that they can do that, actually.
I mean, but it's
replace
like...
Replace him on the roster in the season, or in the series. I'm surprised Chris Young wasn't already on the roster. He's a lefty killer. That's a little bit interesting. So, yeah, that was another note that I wanted to throw out there. Get better, Eduardo. Definitely one of the, you know, toughest competitors out there based on seeing him push through injury. It's one of the toughest things to watch is somebody, you know, get injured like that. So on that depressing note, we will wrap up our podcast. The Indians still hold a 4-0 lead over the Yankees, and our former beloved Andrew Miller is now shutting us down very brutally. I feel very conflicted watching that. If only he could have joined the super pen, it would have just been perfect. But alas, the Yankees do not look like they're in good shape for this game one. So that is it for our podcast. Thank you everybody for joining us. As always, we really want to hear all of your feedback, anything that you want to share with us about the postseason, about anything else. You can do so by tweeting us at @WPB_podcast. We are actually tweeting quite a bit, like with these postseason games going on that we're watching. So, you know, if you're a very active Twitter user, we're tweeting a lot more than usual. Yeah. I don't know if that...
If you're interested in catcher analysis, I'm your guy.
Yeah, I mean, we're just tweeting anything that pops into our heads, all of us. So if you want to chat with us there, we'd be more than happy to. You can also check us out on our Facebook page. The link to that is going to be in the description, as well as our website, which has all our podcasts and some articles. More new articles will be coming out as the postseason cools down a little bit. You know, right now we're watching a lot of baseball and we're talking a lot of baseball. So, you know, in the off season we'll get back into the
group. And we're writing a lot for school, so
turning out more articles. Yeah, we're still in school, so we'll take our time with the writing if that's okay. Did I mention all of the did I plug all the things I needed to do? I kind of lost my train of thought there. Am I good?
I think you did. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. So, yeah, like I mentioned before, we are going to be turning out a lot of these types of just casual conversation podcasts for the postseason. I will do one for the championship series and the World Series. So be on the lookout for that as well. All right. That is finally it. Thank you again, as always, Ray.
Peace.